again, and welcome to the AFTN Soccer Show, broadcasting on CITR Radio, 101.9 FM, from the University of British Columbia, on the unceded Musqueam Territory. If you're listening to this on the podcast, this is episode 183. I'm Michael McCall.
I'm Steve Pander.
And I'm Zach Meisenheimer.
And this is going to be a little bit of a different podcast. We're going to do a few of these over the year, and we're going to be looking at what we're calling the First 11, and some stuff on the bench. So what is the First 11, I hear you ask? What we're going to do is we're going to look at a theme for each podcast. This podcast, we're looking at the biggest moments in Whitecaps history, and by Whitecaps history, we're going all the way back to 1974 to present day. We're going to look at the 11 biggest factors or biggest talking points or biggest moments that we think fit that theme, rank them 11 to 1, look at some of the ones that we're bubbling under and pushing hard for a starting place but are on the bench, and if you agree or if you don't agree, let us know, because that's what this show is going to be all about. So for this show, we're looking at the first 11 biggest moments in Whitecaps history.
And by moments, some things will be exact moments, and some things will be like a period in the Whitecaps. It's hard to define this list, but we're trying to come up with 11 significant, like you said, factors that shape this team.
So let's kick this list off with number 11. We might get some special sound effects. If not, we'll see what we're doing. So for number 11... we're looking at a supporters-based moment,
yes,
or moments.
Well, it's still a significant moment in the fact that they captured silverware.
Yeah. We're looking at the record-breaking 6 Cascadia Cup wins, and in particular, we kind of feel the biggest one of those was the 2013 Cup win, the first Cascadia Cup in the MLS era.
Yeah, it's hard to choose which one was the biggest, because they're all... it's like your kids, you can't really choose. Or like your dogs for you. Well, you only have one dog, so maybe you can't choose. But when you, if you had 6 dogs, it would be hard to choose which one was your favorite, right?
But I mean, so, you have a couple of kids.
Yes.
So let's nail that down now. Which one is your favorite?
The first one.
Okay. So back to the Cascadia Cup.
So the 2013 Cup, like you said, the first one in MLS during... And as everybody knows, the first few years of MLS, the Whitecaps were not a very good team.
Unlike now, where they're absolutely stunning.
Well, at least they have a chance. They didn't win last year. But they really did look like they were going to be able to compete with Seattle. And they didn't... Portland looked like they were on a better track than Vancouver. But that 2013 was the first glimpse of what can be done. And it was the biggest game, I think, and the most surprising game out of all those was the away win in Seattle.
It was a great occasion going down to Seattle. The season was not there were some up and downs in the season, of course, but like that game in Seattle was pretty fantastic. We played, I believe it was a 4-4-2, if I'm right. We played a 4-4-2 that night with...
was under Martin Rennie, of course.
Under Martin Rennie, naturally. And we had a very, very tall strike force of Camilo and Kakuta Mane.
Yeah, and Kakuta Mane became up big in that game, too.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. So he scored a hat-trick, which Camilo played a big role in helping setting him up for, both in some passes and in the space that he created, because people were obviously all over him in terms of trying to stop him.
Whatever happened to him?
To Camilo?
No, Kakuta Mane.
Oh.
I mean, he looked like that was his breakout game, and then... he's never been as good since.
Well, he's had moments, like the Toronto game, the TFC game, but so he's had moments, but it's the consistency and injuries that have been the issue for him.
Yeah.
Well, he's had great moments, again, in the Cascadia Cup again, was like a year later or whatever, against Seattle again, when he scored the only goal away to Seattle, where we claimed the cup in Seattle.
But getting back to the cup win, they didn't capture the cup actually at that Seattle game. They had to wait a little bit for that.
Right, yeah. And so that was kind of... it was a great win. It kept us alive in the Cascadia Cup standings. But we needed Seattle not to beat Portland in the final, their final encounter of the season.
And the Timbers came through.
And
you were there for that.
Yeah, too. So there was about 10 of us who had, went down to the game in Portland, and it was, it was great to see Seattle lose.
Yeah.
And the Timbers Army presented us the
Cascade difficult Cup. Is it to go down to, like, make a significant trip to Portland when you know there's only... was there any idea that Seattle was going to be able to lose, or was it 50-50 at that point?
Yeah, no, I think
anything could happen in Cascade Cup, too, right?
Exactly. It was a cup match. It was, like, you know... It wasn't my first time going down to watch Seattle play Portland in Portland, so I'd been there a number of times in the past. And they've always been engaging and enthralling encounters of sides that I, you know, that are not my side.
And the Timbers had no chance in that game either, right? I don't think.
No, in terms of the cup, no. Yeah. But they should have a shared dislike for Seattle. So they were very happy to not see Seattle lift the Cascadia Cup in their stadium.
Yeah,
and they were. I wouldn't say happy, but they were less disappointed to have to give it to us on their capital stand in front of their supporters.
And that trip after that win, you obviously made a very historic trip from Lower Cascadia to Upper Cascadia
through Middle Cascadia. Yeah, it was great. We got to like I said, there was like 10 supporters there, 10 Whitecaps supporters down there.
It was almost like a fellowship of the cup.
Yeah,
like the Lord
of the
Rings.
So we hung out a little bit in the stadium. We went out to the shoots together after the match with the cup and had a good time, walked the streets a little bit. We had a good night with the Cascadia. Good night with the Cascadia.
A little controversy though when you got through Seattle.
So yeah, on the way home, it was Jeff Tinker and I were driving the leg from Portland to Seattle, and so we decided, hey, we should stop at some historical or meaningful places and take some photos. So we did that. We stopped at, like, you know, some state parks. We stopped at the state capitol and we took some photos. And then we stopped at, like, meaningful places that were important along the cup run, including stopping at Tequila Starfire Sports Complex, where we had won it in 2008, which was a huge awesome. An awesome game for those who traveled. There was a group of supporters who traveled to that game. So we stopped there, and of course it's like an open complex, so we just walked onto the pitch and into the field and took some pictures there. We stopped by CenturyLink and took a picture there because that's where we had gotten the result that was meaningful, and a few other places, and
it was good.
Some people in Middle Cascadia weren't too fond.
We got threatened to get punched in the face.
So. Yeah, but yeah, you know, that's worth it. That's normal.
Yeah,
he has got one of those faces.
It's true, and it's normal coming from people from Middle Cascadia.
And overall, the Whitecaps have 6 Cascadia wins. They won the first two competitions back in the USL era, 2004-2005. Won it in 2008 as well, and then 3 of the last 4 years in MLS, the Caps have been Cascadia Cup champs. That 2013 that we're talking about, following year 2014, and of course last year's dramatic end of season, which kind of made the season at least finish on a high. The absolutely hammering of Portland, which was a double whammy.
Yeah.
Because it added to the record-breaking total of the Cup.
And it ended
Portland's season, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, that's a double. That was essentially the double for us last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Cascadia Cup is, like, it's for the supporters, it's something like a little magical.
It's downplayed a lot by the media and everything like that, but I think who cares what the media thinks at that point? If supporters are loving it, that's all that matters.
Yeah,
what,
screw the media.
What media?
I'm talking about the mainstream media.
No, I know. I'm just joking.
I've heard significant times where the media goes, oh, it's just the Cascadia Cup.
Yeah.
Well, there's two things about that. One is, and I think some of this is changeable. One is because it doesn't lead to something else, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the Voyagers Cup, they're like, oh, at least it leads to Champions League qualification or whatever. I think all you got to do really is look at those games and what they mean to the league and what they mean to the supporters in terms of the efforts they put in terms of visual displays and traveling and all that kind of stuff. And I think it does carry some weight. I think on a player level, I'd love to see, because I'm pretty last time I asked, this was not the case. It would be good to see our players get like a bonus for winning the Cascadia Cup, even if it wasn't huge.
Yeah,
it would be nice because it shows the importance of what it means.
Well, it could mean something if Cascadia ever separates and becomes its own country. Then it'll lead to a CONCACAF thing because it's three teams. That's how many we had before.
Well, there's a Cascadia Football Federation.
Yeah. I'm going to throw it out there. I want to see Jordan Harvey or Kikuta Mane get Cascadia Cup tattoos for the wins that they've had.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
I want to see them get Cascadia Cup tattoos. Tattoos.
Oh, I wasn't sure what you were saying there. The tattoos.
Your accent lost.
I thought it was some Scottish
tattoos.
Thing.
Okay.
Tattoos. Yeah. Just to show their commitment to the club.
It sounded like you were talking about that shorter fellow from that TV show.
No, his name was Tattoo, too.
Yeah.
Tattoo. Oh, yeah.
Just the way he's...
And not the Russian lesbian band, either. Just to clarify that.
They're probably in jail.
Yeah.
What? Unfortunately. Let's go. Next up.
Okay.
Cut that out.
Can you say tattoo?
Tattoo.
You can't. Okay.
Okay.
So that was number 11.
Number 10.
We're probably going to have to talk a little bit less, I think, for these because otherwise.
Okay. These other ones are not as important.
Okay. That's true. Yeah. To you. So coming in at number 10.
Number 10.
We're going back to 2001. And it's when the Whitecaps got their name back. It's a little bit like Stella getting her groove back.
Yeah.
But basically this time, Greg Kerfoot got the Whitecaps' name back.
So the rights were acquired by somebody that was involved in the NASL. And so Kerfoot actually had to reacquire them. Because they were the 86ers. We'll talk about the 86ers down when we get lower in the list. But the reacquiring of the name kind of brought everything back to kind of the glory days of the 70s, and I think in the early 80s, and I think that was kind of significant because it brought people kind of joined everybody together in a way, in a harmonious.
Who is this Greg Kerfoot? I need to see a picture, otherwise I don't believe he exists.
Yeah, he is like a bit of a mystery man.
Yeah,
but I mean that was a big moment for me. The importance of it is the fact that, and I know this is very controversial with a lot of people, especially people out east. Someone like Dwayne Rollins, for example, hates the fact. But getting the Whitecaps' name back, it gave the Whitecaps a lineage so that they could trace their history back to 74.
Yeah.
Hence on the back of the current strips, since 1974.
Yeah.
If they hadn't got that name back, then you couldn't draw those lines. And a lot of people say it's a different club, and you definitely can't draw those lines. And that the club only goes back to the 86ers days. And we're going to come to the birth of that, spoiler, later on in this list. But I just think it's very important for that reason. The history, the lineage, and just getting a name that is known worldwide.
Yes.
We're not going to be a top 25 club in the world without a name like that.
And yeah, because the team was pretty significant back in the 70s. Like, and a lot of people in England knew about the team because of the players that we had, like Alan Ball up here at Beardsley. So the people knew of that name.
Yeah.
So that kind of brought it, raised the bar a little bit. And I love the 86ers name, and I think
it was worth that.
But I don't think, like, for you example, you wouldn't have liked that. Like, some of the hardcore football supporters might not have liked that name, 86ers.
Yeah, I think it is important, and I know, yeah, like you said, Michael, there are those who would deny the connection, in the football community here, or in the football community across Canada, that would deny that connection to create that lineage. I think had they not got the name, there would still be this, there still would be a connection. It would just be more fractured, and so it was nice to see it come together. I think on a bit of a side note, it's kind of, aside from the since 1974 on the kits or whatever, it's disappointing the way that the MLS era of our club has failed to embrace other elements of the hoop would be a good example, but other elements of the Whitecaps history.
Yeah, and I do think though that we are going to see a bigger embracement of it. So, I mean, the Whitecaps, they paid a nod to it in their 40th anniversary year with the Ring of Honour, not the wrestling. But I think in 2019, when it's the 40th anniversary of the soccer ball, that I think that's when we'll see the hoop. And obviously MLS are not totally against those retro things. Portland's had a retro strip. And Seattle this year, and I hate to say this, they've got a really nice retro kit. kind of quite envious of that. Doesn't have triangles on it, for one thing.
Last couple of games, I have not been able to watch the game. I'm more like have my head away and listening to the game because I can't look the close-ups when they show the kit.
It's all going to make
sense. Every time I see the kit.
Connect the dots.
It's all going to make sense when Laughing Cow become the New Jersey sponsor. Okay, then we're going to know. So I think we've covered number 10 there. Yeah. So now it's time for...
Number 9.
Steve can count. And for number 9, I've kind of been a little bit dictatorial in this, and this is my top 11. And
no, it's not. But you wanted this particular one.
Yeah, I wanted this one in.
And I kind of fought it, but yeah. I don't know what Zach feels. We'll talk about it.
So I'm saying number 9, the current Champions League run. And for me, the reason that it's one of the biggest moments is it's put us on the international stage at club level. And, of course, right now, it looks like we could be going out at the semi-final stage. But we are technically a couple of wins away from heading to the UAE and the Club World Cup.
Yeah.
And for me, just to get to this stage and to have people talking worldwide about us, we are featuring Sky Sports in the UK.
Well, that's something,
then. Well, Alfonso was, I guess. they're just trying to big him up for his Premiership transfer. I just think it's a massive thing. It's put us, as Mike Martinego pointed out,
top 24
clubs in the world.
Yeah.
Bang on.
Yeah.
6 confederations.
Paul Barber sitting in Brighton, happy as Larry. So, I mean, you don't agree that should be it.
My only thing is that we haven't seen the full run, so it's hard for me to put it in this list at this point. It could, like, if they, for example, if you're saying, like, if what happens if they get past Mexico... if they get past Tigres and they get to the finals, or even if they get to the finals, this could skyrocket and go into the top 5. And if they make it to the finals, I would say top 3 for sure. But
if they win it, 1 or 2.
Well, if they win the World Cup?
If they win the World Cup, that's number 1.
No, World Cup, okay. So, yeah, so I think it is huge, but it's just still early. And my only other problem is the group stages, they weren't playing against the greatest competition. And in the first round, they beat a team that doesn't seem like they really wanted to be in there. And that's the only the first time they faced somebody of any significance. It's a 2-0 loss. But like you said, it could be different down the road.
I agree with you, Steve, in one sense in that, like, we're in the middle of it. We don't know how it's going to end, right? Like, if the return leg...
And they lose 3-0.
If we get smashed in the return leg, I don't think anyone's going to be like... Wow, this is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to our football club. But yeah, it does have potential to definitely be in the top 11 or starting 11, I guess, Michael. But for me, it's not you can't divorce the group stage and the knockout stage from how we qualified for the competition, and that will come up, I guess, later on in the list.
So yeah, it could go higher in the list, but we'll see. So that's in at number 9. Next we have.
Number 8.
So number 8, we're looking at the Whitecaps in the USL days won the USL Championship twice in the space of 3 years, 2006 and 2008. For us, the most significant one of those was the 2008 one.
And mostly because it was at home.
Yeah, so 2006 was... The performance was more clear-cut.
Yeah.
We won 3-0 away to Rochester. There was a few guys who flew out, but most of them were actually guys who worked in the front office who flew out.
I actually listened to it live in Scotland because I knew I was moving over here, so I listened on the radio.
Wow. That performance was probably more dominating and whatever, and that was the era of Bob Lilly. The one that people here will remember more, probably have more fond memories of, is 2008 when we hosted the final against Puerto Rico Islanders.
Yeah,
and
when we shouldn't really have been hosting the final.
Should not have been. It was all money, right?
Yeah.
It was all the same way that the Flounders won all those U.S. Open Cups. It was you paid to host games.
And yeah.
We had a better bid, quote unquote. Anyways, we hosted the final, 2 Charles Biquet goals and. We won 2-1 over Puerto Rico, and there was a pitch invasion.
Yep, I was part of that.
I wasn't.
The players invited some of the supporters to the after party in the front office. Wouldn't let us in. It was classic.
Wasn't invited to that.
It was classic. It was a classic Vancouver football supporter culture story.
Yeah,
it was great. I'd moved over here in 2007, but I'd moved over here at the end of the season, so that was my first season watching the Whitecaps, and it. To me, it's a special moment because of that as well. My first year here, they won a championship that year. East Fife won a championship that year, so my two teams both won championships, which I just, for
and
me,
it
that
never
makes
happened
us,
again.
Oh, we've won a championship since. Whitecaps haven't.
And it was Tater's first. It was Tater's first year. The core of the side was, there was a bunch of local guys that were kind of the core of the team. And even
Stevie Kindle still playing VMSL. Yeah, saw him the other week.
And even though some of those guys weren't back the next year, it was pretty significant, pretty awesome.
It was basically it was kind of like an end of an era.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. It was the start of the new era with Tater, and then the next year, the Whitecaps got the go-ahead to go into MLS. And then it was the end of the local guys, as you say, Stevie Kindle, Alfredo Valente, Jeff Clark, moving on, and yeah.
Well, they got moved on.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah.
there was a bit of a, let's say, a power struggle there, and the coach won out.
Yeah. And we'll be back with more of the countdown after these messages.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend, and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
That is a sigh of relief, because Fun Drive 2017 is officially over. To everyone who donated their time, energy, money, forgot to donate now but will donate online at citr.ca, couldn't donate this year but will donate in the future, and to our community as a whole, CITR and Discorder want to say
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for trusting us with your money, and we promise to make good use of it.
Muchas gracias. Gracias, gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Merci, genre infiniment.
Thank you, everybody. That was great.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia on the unceded Musqueam Territory. Let's get back to the countdown. So that was number 8. So now it's time for
number 7.
And number 7 is a big moment, but a sad moment. We're going back to 2009. Je me souviens. That's about the only time I'll ever speak French and probably say it correctly.
And we need some sad French music in the background while we do this.
And Zach's shaking his head. He doesn't even think this should make the top 11. I just feel it's important. We're talking about the infamous Voyageurs Cup loss, where it wasn't so much that the Whitecaps lost it, that it was stolen. It was taken away from them by
Shenanigans
between TFC and the Montreal Impact. Actually, it wasn't. You can't even blame TFC for that. They went and did what they had to do, which was score a ton of goals. Basically all falls on Montreal Impact for putting out a bunch of scrubs.
They just picked people off the street, it seemed like.
Yeah, losing 6-1 in the night. Basically, TFC had to win by 4 or more goals to win the Voyageurs Cup. We all thought the Whitecaps had won it. It was going to be our first ever Voyageurs Cup. First time it would have been won by a non-MLS side as well. And history was taken away from us.
Yeah, and I don't know, Zach can probably let us know if any supporters went there, but I do remember the front office. I think they were standing somewhere and in the rain.
Yeah.
as the game was.
It wasn't the front office. It was Tater and the squad.
Oh, was it the squad?
Yes,
went
there? There used to be this.
I missed
before renovations at Saputo. There
alternative
was
facts.
There was this place. There was like this landing kind of above area patio sort of area.
Yes, yeah, that, I remember that.
And Tater and the whole squad were watching from there.
Yeah.
And no one traveled that I'm aware of. Most people here watched it at the Lamplighter together.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, and so the game started, and TFC needed to win by four.
Yeah,
and the game starts, and Montreal wins a penalty. Former Whitecap Tony Donatelli scores the penalty, and we were just like,
This is a big bag.
Yeah, the lamp lighter erupted. I actually have video of that that has never seen the light of day.
You should.
Because I was just so sad after it. Because I was like, oh, I'm gonna film all these celebrations.
If we ever do that documentary we've been talking about that game,
yeah,
we could put that in there at that point.
Exactly.
So that happened. So one former Whitecap really helped things. Another former Whitecap, who is a great guy, and I love him, and he's doing some coaching locally nowadays, was the keeper for Montreal, Serge Djukanovic.
Yeah, he's dead to me.
And he's not dead to me. He's a good guy.
He's involved in VMSL, I think.
I think he's been, or he has been coaching at Kwantlen a bunch, but he was in net, and it's hard to say he was. I wouldn't say he was horrible in the game.
Well, but he might have had one or two flubs.
The team in front of him
hung
out to dry quite a bit, and yeah, six goals late. I know people who are at the game who I know some casual people who went to the game. They're like, it was a terrible game. The other team just kept scoring and scoring and scoring, and they didn't know the significance of what was happening. But if you're from Toronto, it's called the Miracle in Montreal, and you have obviously a different perspective on things. There's some people...
Misery in Montreal, we could maybe go with.
There's some people who never let Mark DeSantis kind of live that down. He's kind of held up as one of the up-and-coming kind of Canadian coaches who's had good experiences abroad, has good connections in Brazil and stuff, and he
ain't getting a job in Vancouver.
And he's now in
San Francisco with the Deltas.
In
ASL. That's good.
So
I spoke to him a few times last year, actually, and
through USL, right?
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
He is a great guy.
I hated him being so nice because of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was hard to not like him.
No, I had a few conversations with after matches at Swangard, and he's a great guy. But
he was the one that put the team together.
Yeah,
but
people got a lot of abuse because they thought it came from him. They thought he wanted to screw over Vancouver.
Yeah, which I find really hard to believe. But no, Montreal, the hatred. So there was huge pushback after that from the ultras in Montreal over what happened. Like, so they did a big protest at
the next game. Yeah.
Yeah. They did some, there were some massive, expressing of their feelings over, they don't care about us, but lose to Toronto in that way. And to put that squad out,
Toronto will
hold over,
apart from holding over us, they'll hold it over them and lord over it. And
I think
the rivalry between those two sets of fans.
I also think that the Whitecaps, supporters, they held it over Montreal too, whether it was against the supporters or against the club.
It made me hate Montreal, and I still have no time for them at all.
Although
I do want them to beat TFC.
There are some untold stories of the consequences of that, but we won't go into now. But
it'll be a different list.
A different list, yeah. But no, definitely the whole hashtag, the whole quote unquote surrender monkey hashtag, is definitely something that people in Montreal have a strong perspective on. So as much as I disagree with you having it on this list, you are right, and it is a pretty significant moment in the history.
Did we talk about what it led to the other game? Should we talk about?
Oh yeah, because it did lead to years of heartbreak in the competition, basically. Because
number of games,
yeah,
and we'll talk about what ended that down the road.
Yeah. Spoiler. I mean, just going over some of them, there was the infamous leading in Toronto and about to win our first Voyagers Cup when the heavens opened because of some weird voodoo spell that MLSE had put out, and then the game got abandoned.
Yeah.
No,
bit of flooding. No big deal.
No, okay, but okay. It has to do with how they made the pitch and how they didn't, there
irrigated.
Was some, yeah, well, not, no, because it was, I think it was still plastic at that point. So they didn't have the irrigation for heavy rain. They hadn't accounted for, really.
Yeah.
And so they did play a role in how that stadium was put together.
I mean, there's just been so much heartbreak in that competition. In fact, let's not even talk about it anymore. That.
Okay.
It's just depressing.
Well, we mentioned Hasley.
So, yeah. So let's move on now.
Great strike.
To number six.
Number six.
Number six is taking us into the MLS era. Literally taking us into the MLS era. It's MLS expansion. At some point, Vancouver had to get into MLS. And there's probably still some fans that wish that they hadn't. But the game here just would not have thrived. If we'd stayed lower level, if we'd stayed in NASL, we'd have been still pulling a couple of thousand into Swangard. MLS expansion took the Whitecaps to another level, and took us to the top tier of soccer in North America.
Yeah, and they submitted the proposal in 2008, officially, and it was announced, I think, in March of 2009, around that time.
A big night out at the Shark Club.
Yeah.
Where they were given T-shirts away, which I've still got up the stairs saying, "Are you in?" Which is a phrase I've heard a lot from my wife over the years.
Oh please, Michael, no. Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, it was a fun night.
No, but it was a huge moment. You're right, 100%. Like, there still would have been a team in the USL if they had never gone to MLS.
Oh, yeah.
But
we would have been playing in front of thousands.
2,000, 3,000. It would not have had the huge impact.
More than the US team nowadays.
And think of it, players like Jarju, you would never have seen him.
Oh. Barry Robson.
Barry Robson.
I would never have been able to discuss the Inverness East Fife game with him.
There you go. So the significant moments due to MLS.
No, there are definitely, most people say the pros far outweigh the cons. Yeah, no, the MLS and how they operate, I don't think there's many people who before and even more so now are not fans of kind of how they function and their lack of transparency and their suppression of supporter culture.
I can't speak of the supporter culture suppression. You know more about that. But they, in transparency, they are opening up slowly, but I don't even know why you need to open up open the doors up slowly to what's going on. Just open it up fully. Why are they're letting us know how much allocation money is now being traded, the here and there, but just open everything up. What's the big deal? What are you concerned about? The one thing always people say is they don't want everybody to know what the salaries are because they don't want. They don't want competition. They want other players saying, "I should be making that much as that guy." Right? That's what that's what they're worried about.
No, they don't want. But they don't want teams. They don't want clubs within the league bidding against each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Or raising the prices.
And they don't want players saying, "Oh, I want this much because this guy's getting this much too."
No, but the players do know what the guys.
Yeah, they find out because the player union releases those information anyways.
Yeah.
So I don't see the harm in letting people know what everybody's making at any point. But yeah. But overall, the MLS thing, I think, is huge. Like we're talking about, when it happened, did you have any concerns at that point, or did you think this was a huge thing for the
world? I mean, at the time, Michael's just walked in his RUN T-shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, at the point, no. The biggest concerns were, okay, it stopped us from building a football-specific stadium for our club. That our owner wanted to build with his own money on his own land or trading for land.
That was probably the biggest.
That would have been huge
if that happened.
Yeah, so that was difficult to have to swallow that and know that. Yeah, BC Place is nice because you don't get rained on, but aside from that, it's not like the gradient of the seating and the. There's so many things that are not ideal about it. They did a lot of work to
make it nicer. I like the fact that they put those sails in, but it's still you can still tell it's a huge
deal. Yeah, they actually work way better than I thought.
Yeah.
And they look actually not bad when you see it on TV. I'm kind of surprised by that. But the whole expansion thing, if we hadn't got in 2009, we would have got in at some
eventually,
point.
Yeah.
They'd have been pushing at some stage to get us in. And I think getting in when we did was great, apart from the fact it saves us a hell of a lot of money because we would have had to have paid an obscene amount of money to try and get in nowadays. But it got us in, and it was good to go in with Portland because you got that whole Cascadian rivalry from the go, and that kind of elevated the league.
Totally, and that would have hurt us if Portland had gotten in and we were still in USL, because when the Flounders left, at least we still had Portland to play.
Oh, yeah, we'd have had nothing.
We would have
had... And the thing is, as well, we're kind of on the outside of that rivalry as it is, in terms of media perception and the supporters' perception of the American fans.
Yeah.
It'd be even worse trying to join that a couple of years down the line.
And the thing is, the other thing is if we had waited, say it was a longer wait than 2011, and with the Canadian soccer wanting to create their own league, would they have allowed us to go into MLS and they would have kept us out of there in order to boost the national league up?
Yeah, that's true. Because nowadays they're saying no more Canadian teams.
Yeah.
If they'd got Montreal and Toronto in, would they have felt Vancouver
keeping them out?
Team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got that in at number 6. So that was the birth of the MLS team. So now we're going to move on to...
number 5.
And it's the birth of another team. It's the birth of the Vancouver 86ers.
And so the story is right that there was 86 people who put in money to make it happen, right? Like that's the...
That's the lore of it.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the year.
No, well, I think all, that was a tie-in. It was a tie-in that Expo was coming.
Expo was coming. The Canada had qualified for the 86 World Cup.
The 86 was a pretty fine year for Canadian football.
Which is normal in football, right? Like in Germany, for example, you have Hanover 96. They're called the 96ers there because they started in like 1896 or whatever. And like it's normal. And you have your pigskin team there.
The 49ers, that's my favorite team.
That's named after the Gold Rush.
Yeah, there you go.
The Gold Rush, there you go.
Yeah, like Schalke in Germany, it's Schalke 04, Schalke 1904.
Although a lot of the reformed teams in England now do put the years of the original team in their foundation.
Well, after they go bankrupt.
Yeah, when they go bankrupt and the fans start a new team and they do put the year in. So it is actually a nice touch. Yeah. But I mean, the birth of the 86ers, it brought professional soccer back to Vancouver after the NASL had gone tits up.
I think it was 84 when that happened.
Yeah. There was a whole year where there was no professional football in Vancouver. And that's one of the reasons why folks say that there's no lineage between the Whitecaps from 74 to now.
But we'll talk about the lineage later, but it did save football in Vancouver, I think.
Yeah, it definitely saved soccer here, and you kind of have to wonder what the landscape would be like here. Not just talking Whitecaps-wise, but like looking at all the other leagues as well. It's like, would somebody else have come in? Would a different ownership group have had an MLS team? Would we have got an MLS team a little bit quicker?
Yeah.
I mean, so many questions.
Like, if you look at other teams that maybe were in the NASL and they weren't able to keep a team going.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are cities out there, not really but in America, I'm sure there are some
Hawaii.
Cities.
Hawaii, I mean, there's no team in Hawaii
anymore.
There you
go, nobody saved it.
Yeah, people always ask me, have you ever been to Hawaii? I'm like, they don't have any football goals there. Why would I go to Hawaii?
Rainbow Kickers, that would have been a good name.
Hawaii Hulas.
The Luau's.
What are the luau's? They always luau's. Anyway, so that's number 5, the birth of the 86ers. Not too much to say, it's kind of obvious as to why that was important. But we're not just glossing over the 86ers, because we are going to come to them.
There's one that's going to be very significant down the road.
As we get into the top 4.
Number 4.
Number 4, we've looked at Voyageurs Cup losses, and Voyageurs Cup heartbreaks.
There's a lot of it.
Now we're going to look at the most famous Voyageurs Cup win ever by any club.
In Canadian history.
In Canadian history.
Because that's the only history you have for Voyageurs Cup.
True. 2015, Whitecaps finally get that monkey off their back.
The surrender monkey?
He was waving a white flag at the end.
Yeah.
Whitecaps win their first Voyageurs Cup. Russell Tybert grins ear to ear with his daddy, Victor Montagliani.
Almost dropped the...
Pamidou Kaz flying around on a hoverboard.
Yeah.
It was a night made in heaven.
And Gershon Kofi brought us the Voyageurs Cup. I'll never forget it.
I mean, it was a fantastic one. Beating Montreal as well.
Yeah,
kind of made it feel a little bit more special.
And it kind of...
Especially because of the balls up against Montreal earlier, where we didn't have a guy in a post.
2013.
That still irks me so much.
And then it also kind of lessened the blow of 2000, although it never will, but 2009 kind of... we had won the first one against TFC, we still might have held on to 2009 probably a little bit more, too. So I think the opponent made a difference.
And, I mean, it goes back to what was number 9 in our countdown here. It set up that current CCL run.
Yeah,
totally. Kind of crazy that we're in 2017,
and
we won that in 2015.
For me, it's hard, you know, as we talked about this before, off air, for me, it's hard to separate those two things. Like, to me, the current CONCACAF Champions League is a part of us winning the Voyageurs Cup, or vice versa, however you want to look at that. They're together, like, they're combined, they're a part of the same thing. In the same way, when you're talking about European football, you're like, okay, they got into this competition by doing X.
Yeah,
it's a part of it.
This could though be the longest cup run in soccer history.
2015.
You qualify and you get into it. Well, actually, it started, if you have it all as like a run thing. So it would have started May 2015.
Yeah.
And we're going into at least, well, definitely we're going into April 2017 because the finals then. And then if we were to somehow manage the Great Escape, we could be going into December 2017.
It would be, yeah, exactly. Very.
There's a book.
Long run documentary.
Yeah.
So, getting back to the thing, let's talk about the games. The first leg, Zach, what are your memories about that?
We got a result away to Montreal. It was
Which doesn't happen that often. They usually play pretty defensive in that first leg. In other cups.
So in, was it 2013? Yeah, we went there and we played crazy defensive. We had center backs playing holding mid. We had two left backs on the left side. And, yeah. and we tied 0-0 and felt good about it and then lost on away goals on the return leg. This time, yeah, we went for a lot more. Scored a couple of goals, including I think it was that nice near post free kick from Pedro that I think was not really expected to come into the near post, and we got a result. I think we led twice and got kind of pulled back, which was disconcerting. But
two away goals. I mean, that was always then going to be a massive mountain for Montreal to overcome.
We left there in the driver's seat, and that was. Yeah, that was huge. So coming into the second leg, yeah, we as supporters had... we and our movement had been kind of working a progression where we started doing some Voyageurs Cup stuff with Canada flags, and then the year after we connected with our friends in the South Side and Rain City to do a BC flag display. And so for this that second leg of the final against Montreal in 2015, we did a City of Vancouver display with words from the crest, the motto of the city, the by sea, by land, by air, whatever we prosper, and then on the other side it said, and on the pitch we conquer.
Yeah.
And that was it was a great way to begin the match, and
it was just a great night all round. It was a good performance. They did what they needed to do.
The winning goal was kind of. It was Teixeira's goal,
yeah.
But Octavio made sure it went in.
Yeah, remember that was the 1-inch goal.
Oh yeah.
And some people wrote him for that, but I do not.
Why? You got to make sure it's over the line. Oh, at that point.
I know, because he's like, because Teixeira's like, are you in? And Octavio's like, I'll just make sure.
Yeah.
Are you in? The Montreal got sent down to 10 men, like within the first half.
Yeah, because they're dirty.
Yeah, and then dirty. Then you're still nervous a little bit, but then that Parker goal in the second half.
Yeah.
I think that basically...
Timmy Parker is good in cup competitions. Yes. I mean, he's got some goals in that. He's got goals in the Champions League as well. So he rises to those occasions, literally. To head home. But yeah, it was a fantastic night.
They won finally, the leg 4-2. They won the overall leg.
Finally got the hoodoo off their back, and as we say, set up the current CCL run. I will be back with more of the countdown after these messages.
Discorder magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theatre, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theatre. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheatre.com.
A stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia on the unceded Musqueam Territory. Let's get back to the countdown. So just before we move into the top three, I know you're all on tenterhooks here to see what's going to make it. We're going to look at some of the guys that made the bench. Well, guys, some of the moments that made the bench. We'll just talk very briefly on these. First one is, and these aren't in any order, just the order I happen to have written them down here. First one goes back to 1983, and it's the Whitecaps moving to BC Place. The end of an era, the end of the empire.
Yeah, and I think this is significant because I think, like, I honestly can't tell you from 83 because I was too young, and obviously none of us were there, but I'm basing this on the move in the MLS era from Empire to BC Place. For me, I enjoyed Empire so much, just being outdoor, and even in the rain, I didn't care. It was such an enjoyable experience. And then moving to BC Place, while I got very good seats in BC Place for the last part of the year, there was something missing from Empire. I wish there was a way to keep that stadium. I think it was also, I really wanted that outdoor MLS stadium.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've moved to BC Place twice from Empire.
Yeah.
1983, 2011.
What do you guys think?
It's kind of funny that they built that big stadium and then a couple of years later...
There was no...
And ESL had gone for 1 year later.
Because they never really built... From what I understood, they never really built a team for the Lions. It was more for the Whitecaps.
And it was actually also built to... For baseball.
Yeah.
If you look where the WAG box now, where the wives and players' families...
I look there a lot, yeah.
Yeah. That's actually supposed to be like... That corner is where home plate's supposed to be. That was supposed to be like the broadcast vantage point from up there. So it was built for the potential of a Major League Baseball team. But it was built for all...
I could be wrong.
It was built for all three. But my recollection... The only time I saw a football match at BC Place before the MLS era was... the Golden Balls match.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Let's talk about that now, because that is on our bench, and Steve wanted it in the top 11. We vetoed him.
There's one big reason why I wanted this.
David Beckham.
No, it's not that.
You love Man United.
It's not that.
The greatest Satan of football, isn't it?
No, it's not that either. It's the...
Cockneys?
What I thought, because when I was doing when we were doing the research for this list, the one thing that came about this was Don Garber, who was MLS commissioner at that time too, thought that this was a significant moment and Vancouver did have a chance to be an MLS team. And I think they packed it. I can't remember the
48,000.
Yeah, 48,000. Both of you guys were at that game.
So yeah, being at that game, I don't know if you remember. You were at the game and you were like, this place is not made for football.
No.
You were so far away from the pitch.
I thought the city was not made for football because the fans, they're keeping balls that went into the crowd and there's announcements going, please return the balls to the pitch. And I'm like, oh my God, what if I moved to...
No, but you were coming there from a European viewpoint. And so I think I don't think it was really the atmosphere or... whether people were educated. I think the people that packed that stadium to watch that game.
Yeah, it was good that there was a lot of people there. The game itself was...
It was November 2007, I think.
Well, there's another story which we won't go into
now. It was postponed.
It got postponed because I think Golden Balls broke a metatarsal. Yeah. So it got pushed back a month or something, which there's some stories behind that we can talk about another time.
The Whitecaps have been plagued by the metatarsal.
Yeah. And
it was 2 months after I moved over.
Yeah, so... the game itself was not exciting, really.
No.
The biggest moment was Eddie Sarango was put in alone and was taken down by Joe Cannon in the box. Should have been a red card. The referee didn't... I don't even know if he gave a yellow card.
Did he give a penalty?
He gave a penalty.
Oh, okay.
I think he got reprimanded for not giving a red card after from, like, the CSA referee people or whatever. And then, so we had the penalty, and then I think it was Sobrango didn't convert the penalty. That's all I remember.
But a big thing that came out of that night was the poor refereeing.
Got us ready.
Set the trend.
Yeah.
Got us ready for MLS. And I think it was the start of Pro. I think Pro began that night.
The other thing was, the other really awkward thing was it was an end of season friendly, so we had brought in like 3 or 4 players from other USL teams to play for us to see if we wanted to bring them in, which was detrimental for some of our current players. And again, that's another story for another time.
So yeah, let's move on to the couple of other things that we've got on the bench.
The first MLS game.
Yeah.
In 2011.
Toronto. Empire was buzzing. I was buzzing.
The Toronto FCs.
It was... I know the Southsiders, we made the march from Oscar's Pub.
Yeah.
And it was great. You felt,
it was a sunny day.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen that often in
March. No, the weather had not been good leading up.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. The mountain backdrop. Just everything about it. It just seemed...
People were headed parkas.
Yeah. Yeah, the ponchos. They weren't handing parkas. Yep. Handing parkas would have probably bankrupted the club.
My ponchos, that's hilarious.
I can just see the bean counters in the front office going, you've spent how much on parkas?
And the thing is that they got most of the ponchos back, so they didn't even have to worry about the money either.
That's very true, actually.
Oh, but that was great. When the first goal got scored. I still have mine,
because I'm Scottish and I don't throw anything away.
Yeah, the first goal, the ponchos coming in. I'm sure the Whitecaps, maybe they didn't enjoy it. I thought it was great.
Because they had to delay the match to clear the pitch.
Well, it was cool. It was also very reminiscent of TSC's first goal in MLS, right?
Yeah.
Where they threw they had given out things to sit on.
Yeah, yeah, and they threw those out.
They threw all of them, yeah. So, yeah, we had Eric score the first goal, which was great. Then, was it Terry got the second?
I think, and he jumped into the crowd.
He jumped into the crowd. He jumped into Massimo's brother and his posse. He jumped right into all those dudes. And it was kind of like a great moment for a local boy to score a big goal.
We also had Atiba Harris scoring a goal. And we were like, oh, great, one goal. He's going to hit 20 easily.
He kind of bundled it in.
And the best part about this was, I think it was prior to the season, or maybe it was during the season, I can't remember, but your old podcast mate, Pierce Lang, was mentioning TB Harris couldn't hit the side of a barn or something like that, and I think he scored in his first goal, so in the first game. Of course, he never played
another. Wes Knight as well showed some unselfishness.
He should have scored.
He never scored a Whitecaps goal, never has scored a Whitecaps goal, should have scored a Whitecaps goal, but squared the ball. Hassley. And and then Eric Astley, first of anyone seen him, most of us had no idea who Eric Astley was.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wow, this guy's going to be magical. And he was a couple of weeks.
No, he had a good run. He's arguably the best DP for the Whitecaps.
He was no Camilo, who of course wasn't a DP.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is why he's no longer here.
That play by Wes Knight, it was just like emphasized his, his unselfishness, and it was an incredible moment to see him make that pass across and Eric get his second, and it was in what was a very, very difficult season, especially the away matches.
Tell me about it as I went to RSL and Chivas in the same week. That was not fun.
It was a difficult season, but. That was an amazing way to start it.
So now we get to the meat and the bones. It's our top three.
Number three.
Coming in at number three with a bullet, it's the birth of the Whitecaps.
Yes, the initial...
Creation.
Yeah, the creation of the Whitecaps, obviously everybody knows, 1973, late December 11th, 1973 is the official date. Denny Veach and Herb Capozzi.
Danny Veach was driving over the Lionsgate Bridge.
Yes.
He looked out the window. He saw the Whitecap Mountains. He saw the Whitecaps on the water, supposedly below. And that's where the name came from.
And from small acorns, do slightly bigger acorns grow? The Whitecaps, first season, 74. Of course, we should mention, not the first soccer team in Vancouver.
No. Yeah.
Or in the NASL.
No.
Vancouver Royals played in the late 60s, basically Sunderland FC. But yeah, the birth of the Whitecaps, without them, this list wouldn't exist.
No.
We wouldn't exist. Well, we would exist.
We wouldn't exist, the podcast.
But the podcast wouldn't exist.
I think this might be too much of a tangent for you, but I think that you're living in the world of... That the Whitecaps front office want you to live in, that there's no football in Vancouver without the Whitecaps, and I think that that's not true, and hopefully, and you'll see this summer that it's not true, and hopefully in the future you'll see even more that there's more to football.
But we wouldn't have a Vancouver Whitecaps podcast if the Whitecaps did not exist, and this is our biggest moments in Whitecaps history. But yeah, I mean, it was a monumental moment. You could argue it could be at number one, because without the birth there would be nothing.
74 was the first game in May. They played San Jose, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was a win. But some of the players on I don't recognize most of these guys, unfortunately, looking down on the roster, because they started mostly local players. They brought players here and there from England, but it was mostly guys like, obviously the Leonard Doozy brothers were on the initial team. Sam
still are.
Sam and Bob. the one name I do recognize, Bruce Wilson. Yeah, he was a player there. Other than that,
head coach at University of Victoria.
For a listener, Jim Easton was the first coach. They had a 9-11 record, and they finished fourth.
So that's sitting at number three. Number two, we're going back to the 86ers era.
Number two.
And it was when the 86ers were absolutely dominant in Canadian soccer.
Yeah, really great. The start, they started, their first season was in 87 officially. The significant period for the Whitecaps, it was really a period, and I know we're talking about moments in this podcast, but this was a period of from, you want to say 88 to 91, where they had the four championships won in the CSL. They had the longest unbeaten, they still, up to the, right now, they have the longest unbeaten streak in North American sports history with, I think it was 46 games. Over 2 years, and the team that, if you look at down, up and down that roster, it's a who's who of Canadian soccer history, like Mobilio,
David Dorman,
Catliff, Valentine. It's just like you could go on and on. We could it was a fantastic a group, like a solid team from front to back on that squad.
It's probably something we're never going to see in North American soccer again. Yes, you could say they were just playing Canadian clubs and it wasn't like a North American dominance, but it was still a dominance, and that's why it's number two in our list.
Yeah, and a couple other things was not only did they dominate Canada, there was one point
they won a North American.
They beat somebody called Maryland or something like that, Maryland Bay, and they played the final in Burnaby, and so they were a pretty solid team overall. They were from the American Professional Soccer League, so it was still a significant league there at that point. In the history, yeah. MLS was not born at that point.
Yeah, hotbed.
In addition to the four titles in a row, the fifth one, they actually lost the final.
Yeah.
So it was quite a run, those 5 years.
So that was the number two in our list. Now we come to the big one. What has made...
number one.
I think you can probably guess what's made number one. So number one, it's from 1979.
Must be the hoop kit.
It is. It's the hoop kit. That's the only thing that happened in 79. 1979, my wife feels I'm a little bit obsessed with 1979, mainly musically and TV-wise, and I don't know, it's just, it was a great year. And in the terms of Whitecaps soccer history, it was the biggest year in Canadian football, I would say.
Up to this point, for sure.
Yeah. You could maybe argue they qualified for the World Cup, but football.
Oh, club-wise, for sure.
Club football.
I thought that's what you were talking about.
No other club in Canada has done anything on that level.
No, and it might have been different if TFC had been able to beat Seattle at home.
I was waiting for someone to say, but the Croatia Metros won the soccer bowl as well, and no one said that. No one bit. But no, basically, in Whitecaps history, it was massive achievement. 100,000 people packing into Vancouver afterwards to celebrate the success. That's how much football meant to the city at that time.
Carl Valentine's speech.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
I mean, it's in folklore, it's in legend, and it's something that I hope we'll experience at some point, Whitecaps winning a North American championship again. I genuinely think we will.
Yeah. I
hope I'm not in a Zimmer frame when it happens. But.
And the thing is, leading up to it, they had to play that semi-final against New York.
Yeah.
Initially, and that's...
That went to the shootout and everything, and they're running, extra people, game.
Goalkeepers running at each other, and they only have, like, a few seconds to score.
Didn't we win because the guy, he did a move or something?
And he ran out of time.
He ran out of... The ball didn't cross the line.
Something like that. I can't remember exactly. But the
final. I've got a pro...
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of
Whistler?
Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar Vancouver. Zipcar. Wheels when you want them.